This is your Day X World War III update. 3 days ago, I told you that the United States had already made the decision to go to war with Iran. And I also indicated that the strike plan for the Israelis against Iranian military facilities was already approved. Of course, as is typical with some of the intellectual late bloomers out there who need mainstream media handholding, I was called an alarmist and a fearmonger and a speculator and yada, yada, yada. Nonetheless, here we are. Just 24 hours after that post, the United States announces that they are deploying their Terminal High Altitude Area Defense System. I believe there's only six of these in operation around the world. They are deploying one of these in addition to the multi-layered air defense that is possessed by the Israelis. They're now going to deploy a THAAD system with 48 interceptors. Whoop-de-frickin'-do. What the hell is that going to do against an onslaught of thousands of ballistic and hypersonic and drones, missiles raining down from Iran against Israel? The answer is not a damn thing, but it's just enough to inspire confidence in the average Israeli citizen not to commit to a mass exodus that would, of course, see the ethnic Jewish population see the fleeting of their majority status within the country, and of course they would be overtaken by Muslims if too many people decide to leave because it's unsafe, which it will be when this war starts. Now, guys, you need to understand something. They want a war with Iran. This is how I knew they were going to go to war with Iran before the election when I made that dedicated video 10 months ago. House Resolution 559 laid the groundwork for everything that we're about to see unfold. That was the resolution that was passed that stipulated that if the Iranians were even suspected of having a nuclear weapon, that the United States would assist militarily in taking them down. Now, this is no easy task, of course. They don't even have the capability to do it, even with the most advanced bombs and nuclear weapons. According to many of the experts, even if you use nukes on Iran's nuclear facility. But what they can do is perhaps defeat Iran militarily outside the nuclear realm, defeat their ability to launch nuclear weapons. And I think that's what they're about to attempt. Because understand, Israel has already won the pissing contest, the PR game. They've decapitated Hezbollah. Okay, they did the flashbang cyberkinetic beep beep thing with the beepers. That blew everybody's mind, okay? Even though there was a lot of civilian casualties and collateral damage that a lot of human rights activists are speaking out against. Nonetheless, in terms of the pissing contest, the Israelis won. They killed Nasrallah. They systematically have been assassinating so many people, from the IRGC to Hamas to Hezbollah, one after another. They're winning that game. According to the Israelis, they've destroyed 70% of Hezbollah's weapons capability. So why on earth would they feel the need to do another attack against the Iranians? And yes, I say another because, of course, they did attack the Iranian consulate in Syria. They did assassinate somebody on the inauguration day of the Iranian president inside their country. These are all breaches of sovereignty. Everybody knows that. Of course, they did not attack Iran targeted against their military just yet. Nonetheless, they've attacked Iran. Iran attacked some of their bases. The Israelis, according to them, all the missiles were shot down, or most of them, even though our eyes clearly deceive us. So why the need to do this attack, especially now that they're bogged down in southern Lebanon, that they just had their Golani base, targeted by a drone yesterday, is suffering one of the biggest casualties from a single incident since the beginning of the war. Why do they feel the need to go this way, to antagonize the Iranians? There's no need. They won the pissing contest. The only reason is because they want a major war in the region and they want the United States to come in. Now the tripwire has been set. The Terminal High Altitude Area Defense useless, pointless THAAD system, which is not going to do a whole hell of a lot against thousands of ballistic missiles raining down, it has now arrived, right? And that's going to be the tripwire with the Americans. The Iranians are probably just going to target the radars as they effectively have. Now, some people are saying that the reason why it's there is because, in fact, it's to supplant the previous Arrow David Sling system that was taken out by the Iranians, and this was part of the reason why they were able to get so many successful hits on Nevatim Air Base. Nonetheless, the West does not have the capability not only to deliver the amount of THAAD interceptors necessary, but to produce. We produce a dozen of these a year. A dozen a year. And it's, according to some people, they claim that Iran is in possession of 500,000. I believe that was Mike Pompeo who said that. Now, these are not all ballistic missiles, but these are, you know, projectiles of some sort, drones, rockets of various ranges, and of course, they're heavier duty ballistic missiles. So why is Israel doing this? There's no need. They could just continue on in Lebanon, and I doubt, unless provoked, the Iranians are going to respond. Yes, they're going to continue with the proxy warfare. They're going to continue to defiantly engage with their counterparts in Hezbollah, as a minister recently did there. I think he's the head of the Iranian parliament, flew there. I think he was actually, is this correct? He actually flew there in his own plane. He flew to Beirut in defiance of an order by the Israelis. So clearly the Israelis are somewhat intimidated, right? So why are they doing this? Well, they're doing this because they need a bigger war, and they're stating that they're going to do it before the election. Perfectly in line with my prediction that they're going to start a war before the election. That's when the war is going to start. Now they're giving reassurances. Don't worry, we're not going to strike the nuclear facilities. We're not going to strike the oil and gas facilities. We're just going to strike the military facilities. Understand that as soon as you strike anything, the outcome of that sequence of events is the same, and that is a full-blown war with Iran. And Iran has said as much. In fact, Iran has specifically stated that not only have they suspended communication with the United States, okay, this is important. Iran's foreign minister, Abbas Araghchi, said that based on America's systematic dishonesty and the current state of the war in the region, we have concluded that there is no benefit in exchanging messages with the U.S. That means no more back channels of communication. This is in contradiction to the fake news circulating on some Israeli channels that the Iranians are scared and they're begging the United States and the Israelis for some sort of Pyrrhic response that won't necessitate an Iranian response, some, you know, a softer counterstrike that can minimize escalation. But this is all mirroring. The Israelis are the ones that are shaking in their boots over this because they know their systems can be easily overwhelmed. And quite frankly, if Iran has nukes, it's lights out. Either way, you can defeat Israel by forcing a mass exodus of all of those dual citizens who have citizenships in other countries. And when the bombs start raining down in Tel Aviv, they might not feel as loyal as some of them may have claimed a legacy to that land have claimed. So their suspending of this communication, and let me see if I can find the exact quote with respect to what the Iranians have stated with respect to how they're going to respond. We know that the severity of the attack, according to the Israelis, is going to be highly significant, and that's according to an Israeli official, as reported to Channel 14 News in Israel. It's going to be highly significant and going to be decisive and far from restrained. We believe that there is a strong likelihood that Iran will retaliate, and if so, Israel must be ready to respond to any further escalation. So they know that there's going to be a retaliation, so they know that there's going to be a region-wide war. So it doesn't matter if they're only striking military targets, because eventually they're going for the nuke, but they need the U.S. and their stealth bombers to bomb the nukes. And even when they try to bomb the nuclear tunnels, there's a debate as to whether or not it's even going to be effective, because let's not forget how many bombs they dropped on Nasrallah's bunker, and they couldn't even penetrate his bunker. The guy died of asphyxiation because they couldn't get oxygen. The bunker itself was actually untouched. So despite the 100 bunker busters they dropped on in quick succession on that bunker, they could not penetrate the bunker with the most sophisticated, biggest bombs, conventional weapons that we've ever seen used in warfare, at least in that theater, and in modern warfare anyways. Not, you know, Moab or FOAB type stuff. Nonetheless, these bunker busters were pretty serious ordnance, and they could not penetrate. So you're telling me they're going to be able to get past what some people are saying is S-300, S-400 multi-layer defense, plus their own native air defense systems, plus the hundreds of meters of rock and limestone that these things are underneath, you know, and mountains, and the fact that you have to hit them with pinpoint accuracy, because if you just get the entrance ways, you know, there's multiple entrance ways into these facilities. They're miles long, possibly hundreds of miles of subterranean missile city undergrounds. This is what the Iranians have been doing for 30 or 40 years, is preparing. Okay, and these are more advanced than the Cold War era stuff because they have better digging machines. So the idea that we're going to be able to, what we're going to get stuck in is another long-winded quagmire, which is why I don't really understand the utility of getting into a conflict like this, other than for the benefit of the military-industrial complex. But the fact that the Iranians have suspended communication with the United States is quite telling with respect to what's coming, and shit could hit the fan at any moment. Now, the Iranians are looking at the skies, and they're probably looking at their electronic devices as well. They're probably thinking about cyber attacks. There was rumors of a cyber attack the other day, a massive cyber attack against Iran. It turns out that it was referencing something that had happened in the past. But there is, of course, the prospect for a widespread cyber and cyber-kinetic attack. There is a prospect for sabotage attacks, assassinations. There is a prospect that the Gulf states get involved, and they just do a major big arrow attack targeting all of the Iranians' missile launch capability. Because if you're Israel and you know that there's going to be a counterattack, because the Iranians have said as much, the Iranians have said, any attack, we will do a counterattack. The Israelis have said, we are going to be doing a significant unrestrained attack. So you know that you're going to get it. And you're probably going to get it from hundreds of missile launchers. So the prime target then is going to be said launchers. Now, Iran has demonstrated mobile launch capabilities. They have these newer launch facilities that they launch from underground. So these, I presume, are going to be the prime targets. However, the Iranians have also said that they're going to launch on warning, meaning that as soon as they see the bird in the sky, as soon as they see the missiles inbound, they're going to launch everything. So Israel is clearly going for broke. The THAAD system is really symbolic and is just a way to get the United States into this, knowing that the next rung of the escalation ladder is going to entail a strike on the nuclear facilities. We're talking about the utilization of the Samsung option here, possibly, which is, of course, Israel using its undisclosed nuclear weaponry, because that's the only way they can target the nuclear facilities. Are they going to put it on a Jericho missile? Who knows? It's very possible. We could possibly see that. If there's civilian casualties, absolutely. We're talking about people who are burning, like on camera, you can see guys in IVs getting roasted in Gaza, the Gaza hospitals, tent hospitals, burning on camera, okay, and that's been normalized now. So these guys will go to any length for the better part of protesters and humanitarians around the world to take issue with what they do. And for some reason, it almost seems as though that's a part of their strategy, like they're doing everything they can to try to ruffle the feathers of so many people that it can it can enlarge their victim complex to the point where they feel that they have no other choice but to use the Samsung option. I really don't know what the strategy is, but if I was a part of their PR department, I would be saying maybe it's a good idea not to show guys bragging about torturing Palestinian prisoners on camera. Maybe it's a good idea that we don't target hospitals even if there are weapons there, you know? So anyways, they have their strategy and they're doing it. So I guess you can say that it's working if they still have Joe Biden, of all people, threatening to go to war even if they threaten to assassinate Donald Trump. You know, something is working. And that's crazy into itself. You know, you hear Trump say, I'm going to, you know, level Iranian cities and raise their cities to the ground is one thing. But to hear Biden say it for the sake of Trump is another thing altogether. And it makes you wonder, you know, wouldn't that be serendipitous for the Democrats to have Trump assassinated and a reason to go to war with Iran and then still, of course, have the Ukrainian war on the back burner? Wouldn't that be genius? I'm not saying it's going to happen or it's going to be staged or anything, but if it is, you know it's there. And of course, he said even an assassination attempt. So everything is being set in motion. We know this is going to happen. Oil is somewhat retracing because the Israelis stated that they're not going to target oil facilities, but anybody with half a brain knows it's going to listen to response from the Iranians, which then that's going to be used as justification to launch an attack on the Iranian oil facilities. And it's going to be this tit for tat escalation. And the Iranians or the Israelis have said that there will be extended rounds of confrontation. So we know it's going to go down. According to a Channel 14 poll in Israel, 54% of Israelis, that's a majority, believe that the only way to achieve victory is through direct attack on Iran's nuclear facilities. Now, that tells me that 46% of Israelis know what the consequence of that is going to be, or they're skeptical of Israel and the United States' ability to do that. So that means that there still is a sizable portion of the population, mind you, there's a very large Muslim population there, that doesn't want a major war with Iran. But I'm sure if you were to restructure this poll as how many of you believe by targeting Iran's military facilities, would you be okay with that? I'm sure it would be a much higher number. We're still already in a majority. If you bring that up to 70%, it's a surefire thing that a war with Iran is imminent, especially if people have a false sense of confidence with the delivery of these THAAD systems and the United States in the vicinity with their naval power. Now, what else do we need to talk about here? Okay, so with respect to Iran's nuclear weapons, Iran's supreme leader, Khamenei, has come under heavy pressure to approve a nuclear breakout. According to Western intel sources, some senior officials in Tehran insist this is the only way to ensure the regime's long-term survival. They already have the components. They have the pieces to put together, and they can put it together in a matter of a few days. So if Israel does commit to a large-scale war, and the Americans commit to a large-scale war, the only hope Iran will have is to establish nuclear deterrence. And there's nothing really to stop them from doing it because, of course, their centrifuges are buried so deep. You might get to the entrances of these facilities. They might even have layouts of what the facilities look like and where everything is located. But it's not guaranteed that they're going to be able to target these facilities. And if they do, it will be with nuclear weapons because there is no bomb, conventional, that will penetrate these facilities. So understand that it is a absolute given. Okay, if you're talking about getting in a shooting match with Iran, it's a given that the US and Israel will have to use nukes. If their zero-day exploits fail, if their cyber attacks and their saboteurs and their exploding beepers and all that stuff, if all that fails, which we can presume that Iranian security is pretty tight, because we didn't see any beepers go off in Iran. We didn't see any attacks of that sort in Iran. Now, it's perhaps because Israel hasn't pulled the trigger on it yet. We don't know. But if we're talking about a conventional war, the only way is to use nukes on Iran. And what do you think is going to happen as soon as the Israelis and the Americans hit Iran with a nuke in their nuclear facilities? What do you think is going to happen? Now, number one, there's going to be worldwide panic, okay? There's going to be a race to get the bomb that the Iranians likely already have all of the component pieces for, okay? They have the launching mechanisms. They have the fissile material that they can enrich to a sufficient grade, which is 96% grade enriched uranium, I believe, in order to achieve a nuclear weapon. They have the deployment system. So it's just a matter of putting all the pieces together. And right now you have the North Koreans so pissed off, mobilizing on their border 10,000 artillery pieces. They're probably willing to fill any gaps that the Iranians have. And the Chinese, while they're trying to play this one from a distance, they absolutely have a vested interest in protecting the Iranians, as do the Russians, because that's their southern flank. The Chinese buy oil, the North Koreans don't give a fuck, and the Russians, that's their southern flank. And of course, they do have a strategic military partnership that was just signed, a defensive pact. Well, that's with the North Koreans, but they have a strategic military partnership with the Iranians that is coming into play. So all the pieces are there, okay? Everything is moving into place, and Israel wants this war. They're going to flip the table. There's going to be civil wars raging from Yemen to Lebanon. There's probably going to be some shit domestic stuff that goes down in Iran. And honestly, if they do all this before the election, like they're saying they're going to, I would not be surprised. I don't want to be that guy who says that there might not be an election, because every year there's an election. You know, it's always the most important one, and it's always that, you know, they're going to do something to make it so that there's not an election. If a war, a nuclear exchange breaks out between Israel and Iran, and there's enough time for it to happen still, absolutely we could see some sort of state of martial law imposed and a war. And this is going to be a war that not only Biden is going to support, but that Trump is going to support, right? Because remember, Trump is the hardline anti-Iranian candidate, even though I would say that they're both pretty much the same in terms of their commitment to Israel. In fact, as I stated, Joe Biden has indicated that if Trump gets whacked, then they're going to use that as a justification for a declaration of war. That would be their casus belli to go to war with Iran, even if there's a threat of an assassination. So Trump, the hardline anti-Iranian guy, can he disagree with that move to the postponement of the election? I don't know. I don't, you know, I mean, anything can happen at this point in time. And it could actually benefit the Harris campaign if a war were to start. Now, some people would say that's not true, but honestly, man, there are no hard truths anymore in the election space, in the economic space. You know, you zig and the result is a zag. Like, it's not like it used to be where there was, you know, if this happened, the markets go down. You know, nowadays, if something bad happens, the markets always go up because everyone thinks that the Fed's going to print more money. You know, the same thing to some extent is happening in politics, whereby, you know, I just think that if the Iranian response is so severe that they are able, with all of their bots and algorithms, to overshadow the majority of voices who are going to be speaking out against a war, nonetheless, they control all the algorithms, they control the bots, they control consensus validity on these apps. They're going to be able to the ones who dictate the narrative, and probably rally people, even on the left, to go to war against Iran. They're going to put some kind of spin on it, you know, women and children or something like that, right? I would not be surprised at this point if they're able to pull it off and they're able to postpone an election. Nonetheless, it doesn't matter because both parties are committed to a war on Israel's behalf. Now, there is an aircraft carrier, I believe it's the Truman, if I'm not mistaken, who was supposed to enter into the Mediterranean, and people had suspected that they were coming to the aid and that the Israeli response was in fact waiting for this ship to enter into the fray. However, it has now taken a detour, allegedly, I must say, to the north, into Spain and possibly into the North Sea. Now, we don't know what that's all about. Is that a play against Russia? Is this playing it safe, wanting their missiles out of range of an Iranian response? Possibly that wouldn't make sense because they still have the Abraham Lincoln right off the coast of Iran in the Gulf of Hormuz, or in the Strait of Hormuz, as well as the Wasp Amphibious Readiness Group that's in the eastern part of the Mediterranean. And I think it's the Patuaga. I can never pronounce that one. Pogatawa or something like that. They are also in the Persian Gulf. So all the pieces are in play for some big shit to go down. The market is seeing oil retrace because they think that this Israeli response is not going to be met with an Iranian response, which is just stupid, right? It's going to be. And then, of course, everybody's going to flood into oil once again. North Korea is on a high state of alert after propaganda leaflets were dropped in the territory by South Korean drone that entered North Korean airspace. Life imitates art. You remember that movie, Leave the World Behind, when all the leaflets were being dropped from the plane, the propaganda leaflets? And I believe those leaflets had the IRGC symbol on them, and everybody was being fed different information depending on which part of the country you're in. Some people thought it was the Russians, the North Koreans, the Chinese. And so we're seeing this play out in real time. We're seeing the fact that all of these wars are interrelated, and the further we go into this World War III thing, the more aligned the East becomes in its interests geopolitically, and the more aligned the West becomes in its interests. That's why you have allegations of North Korean soldiers currently in Russia studying the front lines. I don't believe they're actively participating as combatants, but I do believe that they're there to get some intelligence, and they're probably there in some other capacity. Nonetheless, you have a strategic defensive pact with North Korea, with the Russians committing to go to nuclear war and put them under the nuclear umbrella if the U.S. and South Korea attacks North Korea. And now you have North Korea amassing 10,000 artillery pieces along the border. According to state-run news, they are ready to open fire. Now, a lot of these artillery pieces have already been there, but the new development is that they're on the highest state of alert, comprising 8 artillery brigades, and that they are ready to open fire. And in fact, Kim Jong-un is having an emergency defense meeting as we speak, or was in the process earlier today. So we know that that front is getting ready to flare up because the Chinese just did their largest ever exercise that simulated an embargo and a blockade of Taiwan yesterday. Now that exercise is now concluded, but of course it brought with it the largest incursion of Chinese fighter jets into Taiwanese airspace. All of this happening while North Korea is at the highest state of combat readiness, while Israel is getting ready to go to war with Iran, and while there's an eerie silence on the Ukrainian front in Russia. A lot of people have it construed. It's just been put on the back burner. They're moving assets into position there for a massive escalation as well. There's no Russian ambassador, and I must bear repeating every single time, there is no Russian ambassador in the United States anymore. Their nukes are armed and ready. They're on rolling combat duty, and all of the pieces of the puzzle are falling into place. That's why I've been so busy on the homestead the last 3 days, not making updates. I'm trying to winterize everything, getting everything ready to go, and I've been stocking up on fuel. Between you and me, I've been loading up on diesel in particular, and as much gasoline as I can legally store, I've been storing up, because we could definitely see shortages if this thing gets hot. Not prices, but shortages. Yeah, you're going to see price gouging too. There's no doubt about that. But you are going to see shortages. What else should I talk about here? Did I talk about... Yeah, I talked about that. Okay. I just want to address some criticisms of my recent video where I was showing the difference between electric and gas-powered chainsaws. Now, I'm very open to constructive criticism. I'm no stranger to that. In fact, I'm new to the homestead life. This is not to say that I'm a greenhorn when it comes to, how can you say, survivalist type stuff. I've spent a lot of nights in the bush. I've done a lot of hiking. I've climbed many mountains. I've done all kinds of hard work. So I'm no stranger to danger, so to speak. I received some criticisms that I was not handling the chainsaw properly, and, you know, point accepted, even though there was about 500 people who made the same comment. I take the point, I take the criticism, and I will, from this point forward, use the chainsaw correctly. The reason why I didn't ever want to get a chainsaw and just machines in general, because they make you fat and lazy, okay? And this is the damn truth. Ever since I've been on a homestead, I've been using these machines, you know, tractors, you know, quads, chainsaws. They turn you into a fat, lazy piece of shit. Just to be brutally honest about it, they do. And there's going to be all kinds of guys with beer guts talking about how hardcore they are because I used a chainsaw my whole life. And yeah, you got the beer gut to prove it. Just because you can use a machine doesn't make you a tough guy. Anybody can use a chainsaw. Can anybody go out and buck wood with a handsaw? No, because most people are out of shape. The reason why I've intuitively resisted wanting to go and use these kind of machines, because I know that while they can do a lot of things, and they're almost essential, I would say, if you want to have any, you know, modern standard of comfort in life, they also make you lazy, because instead of wanting to do the physical work. So when people say, oh, rural agrarian lifestyle is such a hard life nowadays, bullshit it is. You're not the pilgrims. You're not the pioneers who had to break the land with hand tools. You're using chainsaws and tractors. So while I accept the criticism, these guys who get all high on themselves, who think that they're hardcore and that all the city slickers are these soft people, granted, there's a lot of soft city slickers, but people who get in and out of their tractor and let all the diesel do the work, you're not that hardcore either, okay? Hardcore are, and there's people with beer guts who are hardcore, and they go out and they live the survivalist lifestyle, and they, but, you know, usually they have a sloth-like approach where they expend minimal amounts of energy, but they're more hardcore than people who just let the machines do the work. So that was one of the things that rubbed me the wrong way, not the criticism about the mishandling of the tool. I can take that wholeheartedly, but what rubs me the wrong way is when people get on this tough guy talk about how, oh, another city slicker trying to do this and that, and I can do this. And I guarantee you, most of these people are has-beens who've never been. They're anonymous trolls who, trying to add insult to injury and dogpiling because, I don't know, I guess it makes them feel good to put people down who are trying to get into the off-grid country life. It's not a hard, like, what I'm doing right now is not hard work. I've done hard work. I've done hard shit. And usually it's involved using hand tools and something physical. I can rock a tractor for 16, 18 hours a day, no problem. It's a diesel doing the work. I can get out there and, you know, have to fidget with machinery and with my cold hands. I can do that shit. That's not hard. Anybody can do that. So, I don't know. I guess there's this misconception by a lot of people who think that they're tough. Anyways, the other thing that rubbed me the wrong way is this overly scrupulous and trifling mentality about safety. Now, I'm pretty sure I've made a video on this before in the past. It's these people who, you know, any opportunity to virtue signal about safety, they're right there. You know, irrespective of the fact that for generations people drove around in the back of trucks with loaded guns, and somehow they lived to tell the tale. And all of these people who are supposedly anti-government, whenever they see you doing something wrong in a video without doing 50 disclaimers, all of a sudden, oh, but you're going to cut your hand off, you're going to do this, you're going to do that, blah, 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 blah. Yeah, if you're a dumbass, you're going to do that. If you're not meticulous in terms of watching what you're doing and being perceptive of your surroundings, yeah, you're going to screw up. I mean, these are the kind of people who are out there on mountaintop. Well, they're never going to be on a mountaintop because they never climb one. But these are the kind of people who'd be out there, you know, advising people about the safety hazards of, you know, jumping, doing cliff jumping with wingsuits and parachutes. Yeah, there's a good chance you're going to fucking die. You know, I mean, these are the guys who are going to be out there policing while in the trenches, asking the guy where his hearing protection is and his eye protection is. You know, these are the people who are throughout the pandemic got off on telling people that their mask wasn't up over their nose high enough. This hyper obsession, this overly scrupulous scrutinizing of safety irritates the fuck out of me. Because as preppers and survivalists, I mean, the essence of it is freedom-loving people doing what freedom-loving people like to do in the absence of government overreach and overregulation. And a lot of these safety rules and laws, I'm not saying that seatbelts aren't good. They save lives. Statistically, it's proven, okay? I'm not saying that you should not put your hand outside of the handguard for the chainsaw. I'm just saying, you know, when you're raw dogging it, when you're going bareback style, when you're out there on the range, let he who has not texted while driving cast the first fucking stone. You know what I mean? So, you know, all of these people who claim that, you know, it's, oh, you're going to cut yourself. You're going to. Yeah, that might be true. And maybe I'm going to knock on wood because someday I might. Granted, I was holding the electric chainsaw wrong because the thing is so small that it feels weird putting your hand in between. I get that. But there's some people, they just love to be a rent-a-cop, you know, to be an unpaid rent-a-cop to just remind you of how, you know, you're going to die. Because let me tell you something, man, in the world of SHTF that we prepare for, the one without rule of law, we're not going to have the luxury of hearing protection and eye protection and hard hats and chaps and steel-toed boots. This one guy was saying, oh, look at Canadian prepper in his running shoes. Yeah, you know why I'm in running shoes, dumbass? Because I'm grinding 24 fucking 7 and I don't have an hour or whatever 5 minutes it takes to go in and change into the 50 different pairs of work boots I have. I'm out there getting it done. Okay, it's not that I don't have that. It's not that I didn't think about that. It's just, you know, I'm getting my heart rate's going up here. I hope that I've communicated the point. Anyways, yeah, watch those Blue Strip videos. Get yourself an electric chainsaw. Get a gas-powered chainsaw. Be safe. But just don't be overly trifling and nitpicky about it. Just because I don't give a 50-second disclaimer in every video doesn't mean that I didn't give a disclaimer about that very thing in the last one, which we did, which nobody watched. Only got 40,000 views. So I can understand why this one that got about 3 times the amount of views, that was a recurring comment that I was not wearing all the appropriate safety gear and blah, 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 blah. You know, the same sort of pussy mentality, participation badge, rainbow, sunshine, and fucking unicorn mentality that we're in this predicament in the first place. And everybody who is supposed to be survivalist and preparedness minded, do it yourself minded, just loves to take the opportunity to dogpile on a guy because he forgot to wear his safety glasses in a video. Well, what can I say? Guilty as charged, man. I'm glad I got that off my chest. I do love you guys. I do. Like 99.9% of you, I love you to death. I do. Even the ones who maybe made those comments because they're looking out for my best interest and they genuinely just didn't want me to hurt myself. Trust me, nobody is as careful as me. I am overly cautious and careful, especially with my kids. It's annoying to them how many times I say, be careful, be careful, be careful. But people don't see what happens off camera. Anyways, if I was a lifetime lumberjack, would I wear chaps? Would I get in the force of habit? Absolutely, especially if you do it as a profession. It's in your blood to do it that way because you did it that way because, quite frankly, because of OH&S, you had to do it that way. So you don't start that chainsaw without having your chaps or your hearing protection on. You know, it's just second nature to you. It's like you can't do it. Your body won't allow you to take that next step until that box has been checked. But for some guy who is not going to be a lifelong lumberjack, who, you know, there's 1,001 things that I can improve on. I'm not an expert in things. But again, going back to this idea that some people just love a chance to dunk on a person from the city, presuming that I haven't been out there rustling in the sticks, you know, for many years as well. And quite frankly, in 6 months, I've accomplished more than I would say a lot of these people would accomplish in years. And it's because I grind. It's because I'm tenacious. We've built a solar system. We've built miles of fencing. We've put down about a mile's worth of gravel. We've built a massive greenhouse. We've built an orchard, an entire off-grid solar system, countless other projects, all while doing daily updates. And again, I know it sounds like I'm tooting my own horn, and maybe I am to a certain extent, but it's because a lot of these people, just to take the winds out of their sails, because they seem to think that, you know, if you're trying to promote this lifestyle and you're just dunking on people for being from the city and ha ha ha, look at him use that chainsaw because he's never wanted to use chainsaws because he knows it's going to make him into a fat, lazy piece of shit. You know, if you're just dunking on people like that, you're not helping people come into this community. You're not, nobody's going to want to be a part of that community when you're just, you know, looking down on people about how, you know, tough you are because you bale hay. You know, I mean, there's people who work 16-hour days in factories and grueling jobs. Just because they're not out there doing that life doesn't mean that you're any better than them. So, I don't know. I think I've made my point. I don't want to beleaguer it anymore. Thanks for watching. If you want to unsubscribe, hey, good riddance. World War III is coming anyways. At this point, it won't matter. To all the rest of you, love you guys to death. If you want to support the channel, you know how to do it. Support yourself, CanadianPreparedness.com. Use coupon code WW3 survival in all caps. Thanks for watching. Take care.